Welcome to the Leadership Podcast, brought to you by Life West, the chiropractic college. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Oberstein.
And I'm your host, Dr. Mary Oberstein.
And we're excited to have you join us as we bring special guests in the world of health, leadership, business success, and chiropractic. Our mission is to create a brighter future for humanity, and we are thrilled to walk this journey with you.
Enjoy this episode, and thank you for being with us today.
Well, welcome everybody to another Life West Leadership Line. I'm Dr. Ron Oberstein, president of Life West, and today I have three esteemed leaders in our profession, practitioners in our profession, and also researchers and visionaries, I'd like to say. I'll kind of introduce them one at a time as they sit on my screen. I'm not sure how they look on yours, but I have Dr. Deed Harrison with us. Welcome, Deed. Great to have you. I'll give you a little bit of idea about Dr. Deed, a 1996 Life West graduate. He's president of chiropractic biophysics, practices, you know, has a full-time office that's running, does tremendous amount of research with the gentlemen who are with us, and he's got a group in Cairo, Egypt, and he's just putting out papers after papers and just doing phenomenal things for our profession. We thank you for that, Deed. Next on my screen, I have Dr. Joe Betts. Joe, welcome. Joe's got the headphones on. He's flying his plane right now as we're going through the mountains. Joe is a 2001 graduate of Life University. He's been involved in research. He's on the board of the ICA full-time practice in Boise, Idaho, or that area. Been involved in research. He heads the research committee for the ICA and has been doing amazing things in chiropractic with that. We thank you for that, Joe. And then lastly on my screen, I have Dr. Paul Oakley. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Yep, good to be here.
He's sitting north of the border where the three of us are. He's in Canada, just outside of Toronto. He's in full-time practice, graduated from Palmer College in 2013, also doing a tremendous amount of work in research. He's currently, along with full-time practice, getting his PhD in kinesiology and health sciences and at York University. So we've got three scholars with us today, and I'm so thrilled. It took us a while to get us all together, but it's the perfect time right now. So welcome again for all of you. What we want to talk about today on this show, and I hope that as you viewers listen in, because this is a big thing going on. It's been happening. You're going to hear historically in chiropractic for many years, and it will most likely continue to happen unless, you know, something is done about it. We want to talk about the use of X-ray in chiropractic, especially in chiropractic techniques, of course, right? There's been so much this last year or 2 years, you know, British Columbia, other areas, England right now, I believe, and Europe, you know, around the use of X-ray, and some people saying X-ray isn't needed and other people saying that it's dangerous and for whatever reasons are out there. But we want to kind of clear the air and really look at things from a scientific standpoint. And that's what our goal is today. So bring out the science, not the rhetoric, or not the the one person's viewpoint or the dogma that could be there. We're going to talk science today, and I'm thrilled to have you three on. So, you know, I know there's been a history, you know, that's happened around this. And, you know, Deed, you're on my screen, I think I'm the old man, but out of the three of you, you're the oldster there. You know, start off and just share with us the history of what's going on. And gentlemen, docs, add in as things go on. Deed?
Right. I'll try to be brief, but I'll describe it. You know, when I graduated in 1996, I can pretty much succinctly remember the debate starting in the scientific literature on whether or not spine radiography was needed in chiropractic technique and clinical outcomes and chiropractic practice for not just safety purposes, but for technique applications and improving patient outcomes. The debate really, you know, initiated in 1998, 1999 in JMPT between my late father and our team at the time. It was led by him. And of course, I was intimately involved, but he was spearheading it, Dr. Don Harrison. And we were debating Dr. Mitch Hawes from Western States, Dr. Taylor from New York Chiropractic College. And then also we were debating at the time a couple exchanges with Dr. Cindy Peterson, who was from, you know, the UK, Canada, multiple places at the time. And so the debate's been going on since the 1990s. It really culminated in about 2005 when the CCGPP guidelines, I don't know if many people really remember those, but they never really took off. But as part of those, the insurance industry managed care organization wanted to see chiropractic red flag guidelines. And these were basically a rehashed version of medical standard medical practice guidelines, which the chiropractic profession was like, why do we need these? In fact, I got invited to participate in a Delphi panel in 2005, 2006 with the team member that was spearheading this. I was at an ACC RAC conference, and I believe it was, I think it was in DC or New York. I'm getting old, so I can't remember that, Ron, but I do remember the year 2005, 2006, they were going to push out these red flag only musculoskeletal guidelines for the neck, the back, and then extremities. And it was led by Dr. Andre Bussieres out of Quebec, Canada. And I said, yeah, I'll participate. Let me know what you're doing. And he basically said what he was doing. And he said nothing about subluxation assessment and technique outcomes and patient outcomes revolving around X-ray. So I said, hey, I'd love to spearhead a chapter on chiropractic techniques using X-ray, all the views, all the analysis, what's the data, theoretically, what's the data clinically that's published, et cetera. I said, I'll put together a team and we'll do that. And he directly looked at me and he said, there will absolutely be no such part of that in our guideline. Mm. And I got the idea right away that this was not meant to be a true chiropractic X-ray guideline. It was meant to be a rehashed red flag only guideline to limit chiropractic X-ray utilization. So I immediately called up my dad, who was with the ICA, and we got a team together, including Joe Betts and Paul Oakley, who were on this. They'll remember this at the time. In fact, Joe was one of the chairs, and we put together basically a counter guideline that looked at everything that the red flag guidelines were not going to look at. And we got that done. It took us a few years to put that out. In 2008 and 2009, we called it the PCCRP guidelines. And I was the chair of that. We had 12 sections, and it was endorsed by the ICA, but also many other national and international bodies. And it was a legal document at the time through the National Guideline Clearinghouse. It was never published like a research paper, but it had a ton of research papers. It had roughly 1,200 citations in it. Not that I know, but I wrote I put together the final draft. So I remember all this. So, you know, I had the unique part of reading everybody's stuff and reading all the references and making sure everybody was doing it right. And, you know, we thought that solved the problem because they had a red flag guideline. We had a subluxation X-ray. Why do we take the X-ray? What views do we take? What do we look for? What are the outcomes, et cetera? It was a damn good document. It was a textbook. Well, then guess what? In 2008, 2009, the CCGPP is still going. They contracted with Christensen and Hartvigsen and JMPT. They put out another paper that said that the sagittal plane of the spine, the entire sagittal plane, is irrelevant and meaningless to patient outcomes. That was the conclusion of the JMPT Christensen and Hartvigsen paper, and it was the first systematic literature review ever done. Well, I mean, they missed a ton of evidence on that when they put it out. So Paul and Joe and our team read that again, and we tried to submit a rebuttal to JMPT. So if you don't know, when a paper gets published in whatever journal, if you want to critique that paper, you send a critique to that journal. Mm-hmm. Well, JMPT wouldn't take our formal critique at the time. And I saved all the exchanges, and Dr. Claire Johnson and I have already discussed this issue in the past. They wouldn't take it. So we wrote a huge review of that Christensen and Hartvigsen paper. So that was our second rebuttal. We sent that to Dr. Matt McCoy's team's journal, the Journal of Vertebral Subluxation Research, in 2009. We showed that Christensen and Hartvigsen missed the overwhelming amount of data on the topic, and that what they the papers that they missed, something like 73 out of 77 of them contradicted their conclusions. So, you know, there was this whole paper trail. So then this kept going and going. And you can interject if you'd like.
I want to ask you a question because and I think for the three of you, you know, what I'm hearing is that the data that's being produced isn't good data. And the minute somebody can rebut the data, it's being either squashed or it it goes out. But there's got to be something behind this. If I'm like telling you I've got health food, and I'm cooking health food, and I've got a bunch of junk going into it, and then, you know, someone uncovers it, you know, what's my motive? Like, why am I doing this? And where is this coming from?
Right.
Can you guys, I know there's a lot of data you can talk about, but I really want to get to, like, what's at the core here? What's happening?
Well, I'll keep going on the history after they're done. I'll let Paul and Joe comment on what they think is the agenda or the reason behind it.
One of the things I'll just add in here is that a lot of these type of articles are done by purely academic types, like DC PhDs who have never practiced or practiced only for a short time span. For example, I was fortunate enough when I was at Palmer and I worked in the research department. I worked for Dr. Jill Bakar and Chuck Henderson, and all I did was add to references into their database system. But when I was there, I got to meet all the staff. And, you know, Mitch Haas, when I was, you know, halfway through, I met Mitch Haas. And he's the one who had debated with the Harrisons in 2000, I believe, 99-2000. And I asked him about practice, and he admitted to me he had practiced for 2 weeks. Okay. And then he went into research. Mm-hmm. So these are a lot of the academic type of researchers who are producing this. The majority of, you know, the funded research, and they really don't have a good grasp of practice and chiropractic, you know, in a true sense. Like,
right. I mean, on some level, when I hear that, it's nothing against anybody by any means, but it's like we're talking about ethical care for patients. We're talking about outcome care for patients. We're talking about there's a disconnect somewhere, because if everyone wants to see the best care available to our patients out there, if you're a chiropractor, if you're a doctor, you want to see that no matter what your profession is, right? You want to see the best care there. And something that looks like is stopping that from happening, if you know what I mean. If we're trying to tie, if I'm taking you and putting one hand behind your back and saying, good, you know, go do your work, and you can't do your work, it's just, there's something that's there that needs to be looked at, right? Joe, what's your feeling on it?
Yeah, you know, I think these academics, as Paul kind of alluded to them, I think they have a different, they're not sabotaging the profession or trying to derail the profession into, you know, disappearing. I think they're trying to do what they envision as the best for the future of the profession. It's contrary to what we see in practice and what chiropractors have seen in practice for over 100 years. I think they're trying to pigeonhole chiropractic into more of a pain-centric, you know, model of care, where that's all a chiropractor focuses on, and they're not subluxation focused, and they're not focusing on the impact the spine can have on overall health as well. And that's where most of the techniques have come from, is working on spinal correction and correcting subluxation and watching health improve as a result. And I don't think they see that as a viable future model for chiropractic. I don't know if they believe the science exists. I think they all believe we're suffering from delusions that this actually occurs in practice. And so I think that's where they're coming from. At least that's been my experience.
Right. And when Deed, I want to come back to you because you made a statement that on one of the research papers that they said that there's no reason for the sagittal, you know, to take a lateral view. Was it a lateral or sagittal view?
Sagittal or any lateral view, they're meaningless to patient outcomes.
Right. And yet, to me, that's denying the central nervous system. It's denying the spinal cord. You might not, there might be somebody who says, I don't like the word subluxation. Okay. That's okay. Call it what you, I mean, you know, this is a mouse and you can call it a mouse or you can call it a whatever you want to call it. It still does the same thing, right? I don't necessarily agree because I call it a mouse, but bottom line is when you disengage the nervous system from chiropractic, what are we left with? And so you're talking historically, Dee, continue on that path of where you were, because it just sounds like there's something here that needs, I would love to have at LifeWest, I want to host a debate and I want to have these people come and have, you know, and everyone come and be able to like have a debate in front of our students to be able to talk about science and literature and let the science talk for itself. And I know you've got a lot of the, you know, you, the three of you have a lot of the science. So continue, Dee. You said after these guys.
Yeah. So I think for me, the 2008 paper in JMPT by Christensen and Hartvigsen really put it in my mind. And, you know, we all have beliefs. The problem was that when they said there's no evidence that the sagittal plane of the spine affects anything, human health, pain, whatever, I was like, you got to be kidding me. So the problem is, whatever your belief is as a person, you use that to frame and guide what it is you're doing. And the problem is in research, that's a very bad thing, because I can take a belief or an agenda, I'm sorry, an agenda to make X-ray look, you know, unscientific, and I can write a paper and I can go through the scientific process and make it look credible, and I can come up with that conclusion by eliminating and restricting what articles I include, mm-hmm. right? And so this is what's been done in the last couple decades by different academics. And I don't have the answer for why, but I do know this. The Christensen and Hartvigsen paper actually mis-evaluated two key papers that would have changed their entire conclusion by their own systematic analysis. And then they missed 50 or 73 out of 78 papers. And the 73 papers or 73 out of the 78 contradicted their conclusions. So how do you do that? How do you accidentally have that happen? I don't know, because I would never do that. Right. So I don't know the answer to why. All I do know is that these papers are published and they're very bad for the profession from an anti-X-ray perspective, and they're very flawed papers. And it seems like we're the people that come in and have to rebut this. And so, you know, after 2009, there was a few more, but then the issue really took off again in 2018. And I'm just going to quickly allude to this paper. I'll just read the title. 2018 is when the anti-X-ray issue took off again by Hazel Jenkins et al. Researchers out of Australia and Canada, Paul, Simon French was on it. It was current evidence for spinal X-ray use in the chiropractic profession, a narrative review. And this was in 2018 in Chiropractic and Manual Therapies. Now, a narrative review is a nice way to say an opinionated review. Mm-hmm. It's not a systematic literature review. It's not a meta-analysis. It's not what you would call a true academic proper systematic literature review. So in other words, you're going to get the author's biases and opinions in there. Well, it came out in 2018 and it started this whole show of anti-X-ray again. The WFC picked it up at their conference in Germany that Paul and I went to. And it's actually when I personally stopped going to the WFC because of what transpired at that conference. And it was initiated by this Jenkins et al. Paper 2018. And so there was a debate at WFC and it was up. The issue's been solved. There's no evidence for chiropractic x-ray to improve outcomes. It's red flag only, right? So, and we all know what red flag only x-ray is. You don't x-ray people routinely that come in your practice. You don't use x-rays for safety. You don't use x-rays to change the spine, and you don't ever take post x-rays, right? Well, the ACA got on board with this, with their adoption and endorsement of the choosing wisely. And I'm not here to, you know, condemn any organization. I'm just saying what happened in 2017 and 18. And so then Paul and Joe and I and our team, we tried to rebut the Jenkins et al. Paper in chiropractic and manual therapy, and they refused our letters. And Paul has a history of this, and they'll say, no, we didn't refuse it. They reviewed it, but they reviewed it in a way that you can't get your information published. Yeah. They wouldn't take the debate. And so then what we did again, Paul and I and the team, and I can't, sometimes Joe, I can't remember if you were on that paper in 2019 in JVSR that we did. I'm getting old, but I know that there were several, it wasn't just Paul and I. We all contribute to this. So we again sent it to Matt McCoy's journal. Chiropractic manual therapy wouldn't take the debate. So we really destroyed that Jenkins paper in 2018. We thought the problem was solved. And then 2020 comes out with the Corso paper, Corso et al. With Pierre Cote being the supervisory academic senior member of the team, the last author. That came out again in chiropractic and manual therapies. And it started the debate all over again, because this one now wasn't a narrative review. It was disguised as a pseudo-systematic literature review, which is supposed to be like, you know, the second best type of literature review. It was supposed to be a watered down systematic review called a rapid review of the literature. Mm-hmm. Well, boy, you know, and this was the one commissioned by the CCBC. And there's evidence that the authors of that paper got paid through Ontario Tech University with CCBC funds. I think it was $120,000 to $150,000. So the British Columbia Board is now paying academics through the university to write a paper that restricts chiropractic x-ray. And the Corso et al. Paper was so poorly done, they didn't actually include any papers in their analysis after the year 2005. The key is in their analysis. Yeah, they referenced some papers after 2005, but they didn't include a single publication in their analysis after the year 2005. So it's like, are you kidding me? You're going to put out a pseudo systematic review designed to look at evidence in chiropractic, and really what you include is nine papers. And this rapid review by Corso et al. Was so severely flawed that Paul and I and Joe Betts and the ICA Rapid Review Research Committee team, we got together, commissioned by the ICA, and we just collectively destroyed that paper. We had our paper published in 2021 in Dose Response. And then most recently, just to tell you that the debate's not over, because recently Jenkins et al. Published a new paper just this last month in chiropractic and manual therapies, saying x-ray is no good in chiropractic. So, you know, it's a long-winded history, but you can see it's been going on and on and on and back and forth and back and forth. And my opinion of this is that these authors, these academics, selectively ignore the overwhelming amount of literature that contradicts their inclusions. And they have to do it intentionally, because they do know about the data. I don't know why they ignore it intentionally, but they do ignore it intentionally.
Yeah.
In fact, they ignored their own publications on the topic that we've pointed out in a couple of the papers. These authors ignore their own publications that contradict their new publication.
Right.
So that's the history of it.
And there's something called academic integrity.
Right.
And what I'm seeing at the root cause of this is a lack of academic integrity. Right. And, you know, we can go on a conspiracy theory. We can make this, it's almost like a movie, you know, plot that we could say these people are doing this and that or whatever. But the bottom line is, if we look at the factual evidence, because in science, in research, it's about facts. It's about asking questions, right? and seeing if your question asked gets the answers by, but gathering all the data that's out there, exhausting yourself to do that, not to come up, like you said, Deed, of, well, I have a belief or a postulate that I want to prove is right. And so I can prove it with three papers, but you leave out the 97 other ones, right? And so, you know, the integrity just seems like it's blown right now. And it's so sad to say that we've got researchers who are trying to fit the model that they want or whatever their whatever the reason is. We don't have to say what the, who knows, but it just seems like that's what's happening. And Paul, are you seeing that? Joe, are you seeing that? And do you have examples or any ideas around that?
I just wanted to point out some of the obvious flaws of this paper, the Corso paper, because first of all, they only located nine papers in their formal systematic review. And that's from the beginning of chiropractic, you know, use of x-rays 1910 to, I think it was November, 2019. So that's really shocking. And then they had two categories. They looked at reliability. So it's okay. That's one thing. And then they also looked at validity, but only two of the papers they included looked at validity. And really the conclusion of the paper more comes from these two papers on validity. And then one of the papers actually doesn't support their conclusion of the paper of the review, because one of the papers is indeed co-authored. And they found that if someone had a straight neck, they had 18 times more likelihood of having neck cervicogenic symptoms. And so a conclusion based on two papers, when 50% of the papers don't support your conclusion. And then not only do they don't make a cautious conclusion, which, you know, based on nine papers and two validity papers, you would make a very conservative cautionary statement of a conclusion, but they made a black and white blunt statement. We recommend that chiropractors do not use radiographs for routine and repeat evaluation of the structure and function of the spine, period. You know, it's shocking how overwhelming, and you have to suspect that it's agenda, because, you know, believe it or not, like Pierre Cote is a high-profile researcher. He's published a lot of papers and in a lot of good journals. So he's a smart guy. I know that. I don't know him personally. I've seen him at the conferences. But how could he put his name on something so shockingly deficient, you know?
Yeah.
It's surprising. It's shocking, really.
Yeah. Well, that's what leads us to this. Something else could be behind the scenes. We don't know. But when you have a top-notch researcher who's putting out poor research, or I won't say poor, I'll retract that, but the grade of research isn't as high or strong as you would expect it to be from someone like that. That leads people to start to that, you know, inquiring minds, right? You know, start to think what's going on, right? The other thing too, Paul, you know, that rapid review, right? Because that's what was put out, right, for British Columbia. Well, I know Brian Gatterman, you know, the radiologist on you know, my campus, and Deed, he taught you, and Jamie Motley and these other, you know, top notch, phenomenal radiologists wrote a paper, you know, to the BC College and talked about the rapid review also. Like a rapid review isn't done. It's done in like a epidemic kind of a deal where you need something right away. I mean, something's got to be done, where this, you know, x-rays of the spine is not a pandemic, right? You know, it's not an epidemic. And the emergency-ness around that also comes to question, you know? Yep. Man, you know, here we are trying to move the profession forward, doing phenomenal stuff, you know, and I can talk about NUCA. I can talk about, you know, Atlas Orthogonal. I can talk about CBCT scans, you know, and talk about, you know, CBP and the work you're doing. And everyone's working to move this profession forward. And someone comes and doesn't just take an arm. I said before, put an arm behind your back. I think we're taking an arm and a leg. And tying them together and saying, good, now go run down the road, you know. Joe, what's going on in your mind right now?
Well, I think just to piggyback on some of what you were saying earlier, I think these academics, they I don't think all of them, the researchers, they just trust the names like Cote and so forth. So if their name's on a paper, they're just going to believe it was done well. And they don't have, I mean, to take the time to go through this, I mean, I don't think anybody... There aren't too many people who are going to see this video that really understand the time it takes to to dive into this kind of a topic and produce, you know, a response like we did. I mean, it's cumulatively hundreds and hundreds of hours work, pooling papers and reading them and compiling them and putting them into a response. And the average researcher out there isn't going to have the time to be able to do something like that to verify their results. So they just get blindly accepted.
Yeah.
And then they'll, you know, blindly look at the names on like our response paper and say, oh, I don't trust these guys. And so I don't believe what they wrote. And it's a shame. And it is a problem with intellectual dishonesty. It really is, you know, to that extent, in my opinion. Yeah. And it would be great if we could, and I do believe the more centrist researchers, professional researchers in our profession, I think they see through it and they understand it. And they may not jump up and pick sides on certain things. And the X-ray topic's one where we haven't seen them pick sides. But hopefully in the future, they'll come to the middle of the profession, will come to accept the fact that, hey, there is research, there is data to support the use of X-ray in chiropractic using certain technique systems, especially using pre-post X-rays and of the like. Hopefully we'll see that.
Yeah, but you know, the sad thing is when you're creating laws around this, you know, when you've got provinces and, you know, countries and, you know, whatever, and everything in between, creating laws around this, that's poor academic, poor science, you know, to me, it hurts the patient. You know, yes, it hurts the practitioner, but ultimately it hurts the patient. And the ethicalness around that has to be called to question. I'm just going to call it straight out. It just has to be called the question. Hey, the three of you, you know, you could be a tag team and bring your research. And if your research is flawed, then guess what? You shouldn't win. Right. You know, but somebody, just because of their name or because, you know, they're being paid or whatever it is, and a million things around it, who knows? You shouldn't win, because the loser in this whole game is the public. You know, and it baffles me when you talk about this with academic integrity.
Right. The crazy thing with the 2020 paper by Corso et al. And then with Cote being the senior author, the rapid review that came out of CMT, which is really what we want to talk about. It's our most recent critique of that paper that came out just recently in Dose Response by our group, the ICA. The big issue, like Joe said, you see a certain name and automatically you go, I'm not going to read that person's name. They're dishonest. They're unethical. And unfortunately, even though I'm one of the top researchers published wise in the chiropractic profession, I'm also, by the academic community, I'm considered the most unethical one, because I'm the president of a technique. And I teach, and I get paid to teach. And so I teach CBP technique systems and things like that. So I shouldn't be doing research on CBP technique. And I'm like, well, I have a knack for research. Right. Well, number one, they're like, well, you should pay somebody else. I go, okay. So then I paid somebody to do it. They work for me. So that means they're going to put out better quality work. They're getting paid. So the whole thing is like ridiculous, right? Like, that somehow I'm untrustworthy because I lead CBP technique. And, you know, we should all, I don't care if you're a clinician or a researcher or academic, we all get paid to do something. Nothing is free in the world, right? Nonprofits are not nonprofits. Somebody's getting paid to run them and do things, right? A clinician is unethical in a way because they have a patient encounter and they tell a patient they need care. Well, the patient's got to pay for that.
Right.
So we all have a financial conflict of interest. So I always hate that. And then the other thing is, this is what the Corso paper did, to not even have to discuss the recent randomized trials that my group and I have put out. And I say my group and I, it's my colleagues overseas are academics, Professor Ibrahim Mustafa, his wife, Professor Aliyah Diab, and their team, they're PT PhDs at universities. And when I get attacked on ethics, it's you're attacking them too. And it's really my heart breaks for them because they don't get any money for this. They're teaching at a university. They have no conflict of interest whatsoever. But yet they choose to work with me for whatever reason, even though they actually get a little flack from it, from an ethical point of view. They get these character attacks that I can tell you they don't really understand, because the randomized trials are really well done. They're through the university. They all have IRB approvals, et cetera. And I'm never there. I'm not doing the treatment. I'm not doing anything like that. I help design, I help write, I help analyze, and we're a true team. Well, the Corso et al. Team, what they did to not even have to look at the 13 randomized trials that my group and I have done with Professor Mustafa, they wordsmithed one simple exclusion criteria for the studies. They said, if the treatment was not done by a chiropractor, we will not consider that a chiropractic worthy paper. So I wasn't doing the treatment. PTs and manual therapists were doing the treatment. It's like, who really cares who does the treatment? Right. You know what I mean?
The results.
Yeah. It's like, so in chiropractic practice, then if you use the logic by Corso et al., we should not be doing anything out of, you know, the academic literature if a chiropractor didn't design the paper and do the treatment, right? Which we know is absolutely absurd, right? We know that there's professional overlap from DOs to PTs to DCs to massage therapists to acupuncturists. We know we do very similar things. And so for Corso et al. To say, well, we're not going to include the 13 randomized trials done by Deed and Ibrahim and Aliyah because they couldn't include them and reach the inclusion that they wanted or the conclusion that they wanted. So they had to wordsmith a way not to include them. And to me, that's just, I think that that's a serious problem. And I don't want you to have to say this at Life West, but to me, that just smacks of an agenda, because why would you do that? Why would you exclude the 13 most recent randomized trials that clearly document that X-ray utilization and X-ray based care that's designed to improve X-ray subluxation actually improves patient outcomes across the board? And it's a shame that that's happening in the profession, but that's what's happening.
Yeah. And we can't accuse anybody of anything because we don't know. We'd have to have them on the leadership line and ask them how did you come to this conclusion? Why did you? And I want to do this. I what I would like to do is invite them and invite you, and not necessarily leadership line. I'd like to do it for the college. We can do it all on Zoom. There's no reason on travel, anything. And let's talk about this, because academic integrity is the most important thing here. And to say that, because, and you're right, Deed, you know, if you didn't do it, you'd have to hire someone to do it, right? Because it's got to be done. It's economics. And if you hired them, then it's almost like you're getting what you want because you're paying them. So it's a no-win situation. But where the win is if it's being reviewed, if it's going through an academic rigor, right? You know, an IRB and everything else. And for those of you that don't know much about research, and I'm not saying I do, believe me, I've learned more in the past 4 years sitting in this seat than I have in 40 years, you know, or 36, 37 years in practice. But if there's a rigor that goes on in research. And if that research is correct and it can actually ask a question and show the reasons behind it by exhausting everything that it needs to do, it comes out with a very ethical smell to it. And I just have to say that if it comes out where they're eliminating articles, they're not looking at certain things, you know, that's what gets called into question. We know that to be true in drug research, right? They're not looking at all the stuff that could be there, right? Or we know that drug companies have been fined billions of dollars for not including certain stuff that came out, you know, certain results that they had, right? And didn't put it into the literature so that they're able to get things passed. It's unethical, right? And we don't want to have that in our profession. We want to make sure that we're moving forward. And so it's crazy. I mean, when I hear this stuff, you paint this picture, you don't even paint the picture. You actually just gave the data that basically shows that there's something, this line isn't straight. It's, you know, it's going like this. There's a lot of crookedness to it. Paul, what's your vibe?
the most ironic thing about this whole thing is that the big elephant in the room is that the X-rays expose patients to radiation, which cause or potentially future cancers, right? But that's, we know that's not the case now. And so, you know, we published the critique of the Corso paper, Dose Response. And then Pierre Cote and colleagues wrote a letter to the editor and we responded. And the funny thing is, there's nothing to do with radiation exposure discussed in this, in the, you know, them trying to criticize our criticism of their paper. You know, and another thing is they didn't address hardly any of our concerns with the paper because we had a laundry list of concerns, okay?
Yeah.
Right? The whole rationale, the selection of a rapid review, inappropriate referencing of the WHO guidelines, eliminating valid studies if not performed by a chiropractor, missed and excluded reliability studies, missed and excluded clinical outcome studies, failure to include upper cervical, full spine, pelvis, and leg length inequality papers, failure to include studies on anomalies and pathologies that would alter manipulative treatment, failure to define red flags, eliminating valid studies based on bias. Conclusions actually defy impairment rating guidelines. Joe can talk about that. Co-authors hold anti-imaging bias and very strong conclusions based on little and conflicting evidence. They didn't really address any of that.
In the name of research, I think that there's a lot of people rolling over in their graves right now who set the course for research. You know, it's sad. It is sad. Joe, any final words?
You know, I think X-ray is one of the targets, and that's what we're focused on today. But I think the listeners also need to be aware that it is more than that, and there are attacks on other fronts. Towards vitalistic type of chiropractic. And those would include, you know, care of pediatrics of children. We've seen that around the world. And also just of the impact chiropractic has on overall health and different parameters of health beyond musculoskeletal conditions. And, you know, one of the things that the CCBC did, not only did they, you know, put money towards these studies for Ontario Tech to look at and do reviews on X-ray use, but they've also funded, I believe it's still ongoing, I haven't seen anything come out yet, on studying the impact that what they would refer to as spinal manipulative therapy has on immunity. And that is something that group funded. Whether that's going to be finished or not, it's something that they're doing. So this is it's a big picture, and X-ray is a very important part of it for what they're looking to do. But the bigger picture is overall, you know, all chiropractic techniques and methods that are used to improve a person's health by correcting subluxation. That's what the big focus is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it kind of reminds you back in the day, and Deed, your dad was part of this. You know, we were always being attacked from the outside. And it's a lot easier when you can see where your attacker's coming from, you know, especially from the outside. But when it's on the inside, it's insidious. You know, it's one of those things that just makes it a lot more difficult, you know, and everything that you just talked about, pediatrics and you know, the using of X-ray and, you know, everything else that's been a foundation of chiropractic, of the care that we give, of the evolution. It's not like people look back and go, oh my God, well, Gonstead, he was using X-ray, but maybe there's a better way now. You know, it's like, Deed, you know, all of you, you know, CBP is moving this thing forward, right? On a scientific level. And we're still being, you know, still being, not that you're being attacked individually or as a group, but being put into that group, right? Upper cervical. I mean, you look at what NUCA's doing. I was just at the upper cervical conference in Nashville. Amazing things that they're doing, right? From, you know, the Blair technique, NUCA technique, you know, AO, advanced there, all these people. And, you know, we're at that stage right now where we're coming together as a profession. And we're working together. We're collaborating better than ever, right? Technique-wise, I can go back to the days when, you know, go back 40 years ago when, you know, it was like you knew who the Gonstead people were. You knew who the CBP people, you know, the biophysics, you knew everything. You know, you knew who everyone was based on how they looked or, you know, or what they were walking around with, you know, in their briefcase. And nowadays, everyone's working together because we just want to see the advancement of the human race, right? And we all have our ways of doing it. And I want to thank the three of you. I want to thank you for everything that you're bringing to the table, for the exhaustive work that you're doing to have to defend what we do and what we know that's right. And the reason why I want to thank you triply for that is because you should be, you know, doing what you're doing, moving forward to progress it, right? And every time we go on the defense, we can't go, you know, we can't be moving forward with what we really want to do. So thank you for not only taking the time and the talent, but your treasure, because it costs money to do this. And so thank you for all that you're doing around that and everything that's happening, you know, that you're able to stand up and protect and bring truth to chiropractic, right? And to our research and for the ethicalness that you guys do, you know, along the way. So thank you guys. I so appreciate it. And our viewers, we're going to have a bunch of, there's, you know, we flashed a bunch of different areas, websites on the bottom. Go to these websites, you know, donate to CBP, donate to their research, donate to wherever you want to donate to. I don't care, but do what you need to do so that we can have this profession keep moving forward and knowing that, you know, we're doing the right thing. And right thing show, research shows what's right and what isn't. It does. So thank you all. Appreciate you so much for being with us, Dee. Thank you for carrying on all the work you're doing, Joe, for all the work you're doing in with the ICA and with CBP nonprofit and Paul for all of your research and for going on with your studies right now, getting your PhD. You didn't have to do that. I know that, but you know, going through the rigors of that and keeping up with everything. I'm going to have you guys back on the show again. I hope to bring in a debate. I would love to have that. I think it would be important for our students to be able to have that, to be able to see it, to be able to make that. So we're going to work this year in 2022 to make that happen. I know you guys I'll be inviting. I hope you'll accept the invitation. But mostly for our readers, for our viewers, not our readers, but for our viewers, thank you for being with us. You know, today was very educational. We do leadership lines on a lot of different topics, but I have to tell you, being in the academic seat right now, that this is one of the most important conversations we can be having right now. And thank you for constantly listening, constantly checking in with the leadership line, sharing it with all of your people. We're getting amazing numbers of people who are watching it. Keep sharing it. Go to the websites that we listed below and do what you need to do, because you know that sometimes if there's people who are doing things like the three gentlemen that doctors who are with us today, but it also takes a lot of support to make that happen. So it's as easy as just writing a check or doing whatever needs to be done and keep doing what you're doing out in the field and making this world a better place. So until our next leadership line, we'll drop another one in 2 weeks. Next week, you'll see a Life by Life West. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your support of Life West. Thank you for your support of chiropractic. And mostly thank you for helping change humanity to make it a healthier, more saner place to live. We'll see you later.
Thank you for joining us today and for the love, commitment, and passion you emanate every day.
Together, we know we will make this world a better place.